Think of being outdoors among trees. Perhaps you see the different shapes and shades of green and hear the relaxing sound of a breeze filtering through the leaves. Welcome to Mothering Earth, your source for sustainable living news. I'm Salwa Khan. You don't have to be a literal tree hugger to appreciate the wonders of trees. They give us fruit and nuts to eat. They clean the air we breathe, filter the water we drink, provide habitat for wildlife, absorb harmful carbon from the atmosphere, and produce oxygen through photosynthesis. That is a lot of great stuff, which explains why the Arbor Day Foundation is such an enthusiastic supporter of trees and a fount of information about them. My guests are Ben Huesingfeldt, Orchard and Grounds Manager at the Arbor Day Farm in Nebraska City, and Katie Loos, President of the Arbor Day Foundation.
I made the leap from corporate America to the Arbor Day Foundation almost 10 years ago now. The first time that I explored a role here, the timing just didn't exactly align. I think I was about 6 months pregnant with my first child at the time. But about a year after I became a mother myself, everything changed. I had really gotten to know the organization, was a huge fan of their mission and the impact that they were having around the world, and I was really impressed by the team that I had met with, and I had this new tiny human in front of me, and I wanted my vocation to change the world that he was entering. And
give us an overview of the Arbor Day Foundation. What is its mission?
Yeah. You know, the Arbor Day Foundation was founded in 1972 with a very simple mission. We inspire people to plant, nurture, and celebrate trees. And it really goes back 100 years even prior to that. The founder of the National Arbor Day holiday was a man by the name of J. Sterling Morton, and he moved to Nebraska in 1854 from Michigan with all of its beautiful forested land. And as you can imagine, as he arrived in Nebraska, one of the first things that he noticed was the lack of trees. And so Morton proposed this national tree planting holiday. And as the legend goes, more than 1 million trees were planted in Nebraska on that first celebration of Arbor Day in 1872. And now today, the National Arbor Day holiday is celebrated all over the United States on the last Friday of April each year. And so our foundation was founded on the 100-year anniversary of that national holiday that bears our name. And so we work every day to fulfill on that mission of inspiring people to plant, nurture, and celebrate trees by helping to accelerate tree planting initiatives in front yards and backyards, in cities and towns, all across the U.S. and all across the globe, as well as in natural forest lands. In fact, in the past 52 years, we've planted over 500 million trees.
And I understand there's a global aspect to the foundation, which I didn't realize, and I think a lot of people may not know about. Tell us about that.
Yeah. You know, we currently have over 50 active countries that we are working in with planting projects around the world. Part of the beauty of the foundation as you get to know us is that we are network builders. We work to find the best possible tree planting partners in every region of the planet, really, so that we understand the needs that are out there, so that as we understand kind of the needs that are out there that people want to plant trees for, we can leverage the expertise of local individuals who really understand those ecosystems, and so that we can ensure that we are planting the right trees at the right time in the right place.
And I recently visited the Arbor Day Farm and spent a wonderful day there. For those who haven't been, what can people expect when they get there?
Arbor Day Farm is a gem of a place located in southeast Nebraska in a town called Nebraska City. And it is the place that we always tell people where our mission comes to life. Each year, we welcome over 70,000 guests to Arbor Day Farm, and it actually just celebrated its 30th birthday last fall. The property spans over 260 acres of land and includes a 140-room hotel and conference center. There's incredible dining, miles of walking trails, apple orchards, and a tree adventure, including our own treetop village with 12 elevated tree houses and a wonder net to allow you to really get out and play among the trees. The idea behind Arbor Day Farm and why it was built in the first place was with this dedicated vision of being a place of convening conservation-minded individuals from around the world. And we continue to do just that. So from weddings to family reunions to board meetings to business retreats to apple festivals, this place has something for everyone.
The Arbor Day Foundation offices are in Lincoln, Nebraska, while the Arbor Day Farm is in Nebraska City, Nebraska. That's where we find Ben Husingfelt, the orchard and grounds manager at the farm. The farm has its own specific purpose.
As Katie said earlier, it's really where the Arbor Day Foundation's mission of planting, nurturing, and celebrating trees really comes to life. We have our tree adventure, which allows you to get out in the trees and, you know, play within 50 acres of natural sort of playground, tree nature themed equipment. The Treetop Village, which takes you, you know, you're suspended on rope bridges and trampolines, you know, from the trees themselves. And at the end of the day, if you go through the tree adventure, you get a free tree to plant in wherever you like. And that's to help, you know, foster the future tree planters of America. And everything we do really, like I said, really amplifies the foundation's mission.
And so tell us about the orchards.
Well, there's a great history of orcharding, especially apple orchards in this area. J. Sterling Morton, the founder of Arbor Day, was a great apple lover. His hobby was tree fruit. He had a lot of apple trees on the property. And eventually in the early 1900s, his son, Joy Morton, ended up turning it into a very successful, very large commercial orchard business, one of the biggest in the Midwest, if you can believe it. And so just a great history of tree fruit in the area. And our, you know, we have a fraction of what they had back in the 1900s, but our 35 acres of apple trees really really pays homage to the history of the area.
You're listening to Mothering Earth. I'm Salwa Khan. I'm speaking today with Ben Husingfelt. He is the Orchards and Grounds Manager at the Arbor Day Farm in Nebraska City. And we see trees standing there, and they look beautiful. But what is it they're doing all day and night?
Well, trees do a lot more than just look pretty, but they do that very well. They help just very quick examples. You know, we could go on and on about this question, but they help clean our air. Everyone knows that. You know, we do every Arbor Day, we do a kids program here in Nebraska City and talk about the importance of the Arbor Day Foundation's mission. And it's always funny because we present to fourth graders, and right about Arbor Day, late April is when they're studying tree health and anatomy. And so the first question you ask them, what do trees do for us? And they always say, give us oxygen. So it's really cool to hear the kids talk about how it helps clean our air. You know, the foundation's done studies that say that looking at trees can help reduce stress at work. If you have a window seat or a window room at a hospital, you're proven to heal faster if you have a view of trees. They clean and filter our drinking water, all the aquifers under the ground that help replenish the fresh water supply of the earth. They all get filtered through the trees. If you plant, you know, a tree at the right place at your home, it can help help protect your house from scorching summer heat or cold winter winds. You know, they increase property value. And yeah, like you said, they do a lot more than just look pretty.
And they also provide habitat for wildlife. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Some of our favorite tree down here at Arbor Day Farm is our great historic Arbor Day oak, which is a big bur oak tree. And it's always fun watching the tour groups come through and try to count how many squirrels and birds and stuff you see in the trees, because they do make a fantastic habitat for a lot of different forest animals.
Right. And how do trees use water? How is it they purify water?
Yeah, that's a good question. So every tree obviously has roots. And those roots, depending on the tree variety, spread out in a matter of whichever direction, up, down, sideways. And those roots, the very hair-like thin particles of the roots are the parts that are actually taking up the water. And they suck water up through the roots and passes it up through the tree to get to the leaves. And depending on which variety of tree you have, water can move very quickly. Like on a 100-foot tree, like I said, depending on variety, it can move almost a foot every minute, moving up the trunk of the tree. And so the trees draw the water up through the roots, up through the tree, and then it lands in the leaves. And the transpiration, which is the evaporation of the water through the leaves, help produce carbohydrates for the tree through photosynthesis. So there's always a lot of water moving through trees every second of every day.
Do certain trees use or, you know, uptake more water than others?
Yes, absolutely. You know, a tall 100-foot tree, according to the Forest Service, you know, it can use 11,000 gallons of water in a single growing season for, a 100-foot tree. And obviously, smaller ones take up a little bit less. And the average kind of rule of thumb is between 10 and 150 gallons a day is what an average tree will uptake through the roots.
You're listening to Mothering Earth. I'm Salwa Khan, here today with Ben Huesingvelt, Orchard and Grounds Manager at the Arbor Day Farm. And we're talking trees. As you know, Ben, we're having these longer periods of really intense heat. How does that affect trees?
We're not 100% sure is really the answer. You know, with the prolonged periods of heat stress, of which we haven't really ever seen before in some areas, especially like in the Midwest, Great Plains here in Nebraska, we will get hot, but we won't have weeks and weeks of drought and heat. So we're not quite sure how the trees will be affected, but trees do have an amazing adaptability in sort of a survival instinct. You know, I like to say that trees sweat the same as humans do in a process called transpiration. They'll send water out from their leaves from the stomata openings, which are just like pores in the human skin, and that's how they kind of cool off and create energy by that transpiration. And so if they need to, there are studies that show that the tree will actually close the stomata more during a heat stress event, so it will transpire less and conserve water that way. Like I said, the leaves and the needles of the trees are where that transpiration is taking place. So if a tree is truly heat stressed, you'll notice the leaves will start to curl to avoid surface area, so they won't sweat as much. They'll even drop some of their leaves or their needles. You'll see that quite a bit during heat stress. And that's all, you know, a reaction by the tree to help conserve water during that time.
So that's also what would happen in a drought situation, right?
Yes. And it's interesting, you know, examining the different types of strategies that trees have to the different effects. You know, every tree is a little different. You know, during an intense heat drought situation, there's even studies that show that certain trees can produce a certain protein that help reduce the heat stress. And it's those kind of attributes that you have to look for moving forward in the future as to what kind of trees, you know, we should be planting. You know, with the changing climate, what we used to be planting, you know, 10, 30 years ago, might not be what we need to be planting today for the, you know, the climate change happening in the future.
I've always been a big fan of trees. I remember as a child climbing up into a large tree and just sitting there, hugging a branch so I wouldn't fall while enjoying the bird's eye view. There's a wide variety of trees on Earth, but it seems that certain trees do well anywhere. I asked Ben Huesingvelt what trees fit that bill.
The first thing that comes to mind is the oak tree. There's seven different oak variety or oak species that are native to Nebraska alone, and there's hundreds of types of oaks all throughout the world. And you can find an oak tree of some variety almost on almost every continent. So oaks are a very old variety. They kind of moved in, you know, thousands and thousands of years ago. They were once a warm tropical sort of tree, and they've just kind of been going north and south of that and developing and changing to more colder climates. So oaks are a good example. They can be found just about anywhere.
Now, I understand that the hardiness zones, which gardeners use to kind of decide, you know, can I plant this plant or that tree or whatever, but these are moving because of climate change. So how does that affect us, or how does that affect gardeners?
Well, the hardiness zones are all about the minimum temperature. So what's the average minimum temp in that growing zone will kind of be it's a good guide to tell you what kind of trees or plants in general can survive those minimum temperatures that we get on average. And so, you know, the areas, like you said, the growing zone, the hardiness zones are shifting. And so you really have to be mindful of what you can and can't plant anymore. Like I said before, you know, what you used to be able to plant, you know, maybe you're getting new varieties because like an example in Nebraska, we moved up a hardiness zone. So we're getting a little warmer, you know, per the trend of the world. So maybe in 10, 30 years, I'm not saying this is a good thing, but we might be open to planting new varieties of trees and plants that we wouldn't have been able to grow here before. And like I said, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe we need to be looking into trees and plants that can thrive in a warmer climate versus the ones that wouldn't be able to.
You're listening to Mothering Earth. I'm Salwa Khan, here today with Ben Huysinkveld, Orchard and Grounds Manager at the Arbor Day Farm. For the average gardener, what is the best strategy when they want to select a tree for the yard?
Well, the Arbor Day Foundation has a great saying. Katie might chime in on this one, but the right place or the right tree at the right place. So often you see people just, oh, this tree looks pretty, or oh, I think I have room for a small tree here, I'll plant it. But it's best to find the right tree for the right area, and that means space, purpose. You know, try to imagine if you plant an oak tree, you know, in 100 years, it'll still be there and it'll be 100 foot tall. So if you don't have the space for that, be thinking about the size of the mature tree before you plant it. Is there a purpose for the tree? Do you want it to shade your house? Do you have a garden that it shouldn't be shading in, you know, 10 years when it grows up? Are you looking for a fruit tree, something to attract pollinators, something that'll be pretty in the spring or keep its leaves on longer in the fall? All important things to consider when you're, you know, planting a 200 to 300 year commitment. Another important aspect is, kind of a hot topic among planters and gardeners is native trees, native plant varieties. And, you know, I personally believe there is a difference between a native species and a natural species. So a native species is a solid bet. You know, it's native to the area that you're in. It's proven to grow well, it's proven to thrive, and it won't become invasive or overtake or, you know, have a harmful effect. Natural trees are trees that aren't necessarily native to that area, but they don't pose any other threat that a native tree wouldn't. And as I said, you know, we might be leaning more towards these natural trees and plants. Like if you're an average gardener and you're looking for a good tree, maybe consider something, you know, that may not be native, but is natural, that will grow well and possibly, you know, thrive in the future climate change that will probably be happening here in the future.
Proponents of planting only native trees may have a problem with what Ben just said. His distinction between native and natural is an interesting one and maybe something we have to consider as climate change plays havoc with what we think of as our normal in terms of temperature, rainfall, and soil conditions. Moving on, what about trees and plants that are considered invasive? How do we identify them?
You can Google, a short Google or a quick Google will tell you all kinds of invasive trees and plants that you want to stay away from. But basically, an invasive tree is one that reproduces very quickly and can spread very easily. Something that changes the ecology of the ground in a very short time. A good example of that for us in Nebraska here, which is kind of interesting, is the Eastern Red Cedar. The Eastern Red Cedar is native to Nebraska. It's a great tree. It's very drought tolerant, very hardy, great tree overall, but it's considered invasive because it spreads very quickly. And it can change, you know, if you have a cedar tree in a pasture, the cedar tree will fill that pasture with its offspring very, very quickly within, you know, maybe 5 to 10 years. So very, very fast growing tree. And that's a good example of an invasive, just something that changes the area very quickly and arguably for worse.
You mentioned that oaks can live hundreds of years. But some trees don't live that long. What are the factors that go into determining the lifespan of the tree?
A lot of things. certainly the type of tree. Some trees are very short growing. In Nebraska, the native tree persimmon is, you know, you might get 60 years out of it. An apple tree usually lives about 60 to 70 years. And that's just the way they are. That's their lifespan. Other trees like an oak tree. One of the oldest trees in Nebraska is actually an oak tree up along the Missouri River Valley. And that estimates, I think it's around 500 years old. So certainly the type of tree, where it's located, you can definitely argue, and people have, that a more stressful environment yields a longer living tree. I think it is labeled the oldest living tree in Nebraska is a juniper, which is growing in the sandhills of western Nebraska, which is a very, very arid, desert-like climate that has caused the tree to basically, it'll never grow as fast, which means it has less susceptibility to diseases. The wood will be denser, and growing faster doesn't necessarily mean it'll be growing longer. So certainly the climate and the environment of where that tree is at greatly affects the age. Other stress factors, heat or drought, fire, all things like that can stress a tree out and either cause it to, you know, become hardier or it'll live through it or, you know, have a much shorter lifespan because of those stresses.
You're listening to Mothering Earth. I'm Salwa Khan here with Ben Huesingvelt, Orchards and Grounds Manager at the Arbor Day Farm. Deforestation is a problem all over the world, and a lot of it is happening in South America, where land is cleared for livestock to graze or to grow crops to feed livestock. I asked Katie Lose, president of the Arbor Day Foundation, how big a problem this is.
I mean, deforestation continues to be an issue around the world. And, you know, it really is, it's bred out of a number of reasons. But the use, kind of the changing uses of land, whether it is for livestock and for other animals, whether it's for agricultural production, that does have effects on just forests' abilities to thrive over time. And we've certainly seen in some parts of the world, you know, the Arbor Day Foundation has a coffee program, and we have sourced coffee beans from throughout the South American regions of Peru for several years now. And we have continued to see that farmers have had to move to higher and higher grounds in order to plant new crops because the land has been used so often and for so many different purposes that it no longer retains a lot of the qualities necessary for trees to thrive there. And so deforestation is an issue. Its challenges vary by location and by place. There's a lot of different factors and a variety of factors that go into it. And that's part of the work that that we try to do, is to find good partners and good projects that can help to reforest and to reclaim some of these lands back to their intended state.
So, Ben, what is your favorite or one of your favorite trees and why?
Easy question. It's always been the eastern cottonwood. It's our state tree in Nebraska. I had four or five of them in my yard growing up, and that probably affected my decision. But eastern cottonwood is it's a great tree native to Nebraska. It can get upwards of 100 feet tall. I believe the state champion tree for the state of Nebraska, the cottonwood is, I believe it's 37 feet around and almost 300 years old. So it's a great hardy tree and very cool to look at. They fill the skyline of wherever they're at.
And Katie, what is your favorite tree?
You know, one of my favorite trees has to be the aspen tree. I grew up near the Rocky Mountains in Colorado, and we spent much of my childhood and now even adult life. I take my own family there to the mountains in Colorado, and there is just something very nostalgic about that tree, about the colors that it brings in the fall. And as I've gotten older and learned more about how the root system is all interconnected, that I've really appreciated about the aspen tree.
And now people can obviously be members of the Arbor Day Foundation, and we hope more people will join. But cities can also become Arbor Day cities. How does that happen? How does a town or city get that designation?
Yeah, the Tree City USA program is actually what it's called. And it was established in 1976. It's one of our oldest programs here at the Arbor Day Foundation. And it really just offers communities an easy framework to maintain and expand their tree cover in their city or in their town. It also provides a platform to celebrate their efforts, demonstrating their commitment to tree care and environmental stewardship to their residents, visitors, and the world. And so it is currently recognized in over 3,500 communities in all 50 states, including Washington, D.C. and Puerto Rico. And I would say that the dedication of our Tree City USA participants to their trees has remained really steadfast over the years. The program really aims to continue its growth, inspiring for every American to live in a Tree City USA community. There's only four key standards that a city has to meet in order to become a Tree City USA recognized community, and that is to maintain a tree board or department, to have a community tree ordinance, to spend at least $2 per capita on urban forestry, and finally, to have an Arbor Day celebration.
The Arbor Day Foundation website is at arborday.org. There's a lot of information on identifying trees, on tree care, and tree-related questions. You can also find the hardiness zone map that Ben talked about, which can help you figure out what type of tree might be good for your area, and ways in which you can get involved in the work of the Arbor Day Foundation. That's all for now. Thanks so much to my guests, Katie Loos, president of the Arbor Day Foundation, and Ben Huesingvelt, orchard and grounds manager at the Arbor Day Farm. And thanks so much to you for listening. Mothering Earth is on Instagram and Facebook. Our website is mothering-earth.com. Until next time, this is Salwa Khan signing off for Mothering Earth, your source for sustainable living news. The views and opinions expressed on Mothering Earth do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of this station.